For an amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need, visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. How's everyone doing? In today's episode of Locked On NFL Draft, we will be discussing the year two guys, some quarterbacks, receivers, and cornerbacks. We're going to get into the details of all these guys, my analysis on some of these guys, and more. So keep it locked right here, Locked On NFL Draft.
You are Locked On NFL Draft, your daily podcast covering the NFL Draft. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Locked On NFL Draft. I'm your host, former NFL and AFL defensive back, Eric Crocker. And of course, my guy, Ryan Tracy. He is still on vacation. He'll be back soon. But I hope you guys have enjoyed listening to some of the conversations that we've had. And we're going to kick it off today by talking about some year two guys. All right. We evaluated some guys, some rookies, how they're doing, put some reports out on those guys. We've talked about some year three guys, especially the receiver position. But we're getting into some year two guys. And we're going to start with the quarterback position and Joe Burrow. Obviously, he was the first overall pick. And I don't think anybody ever disputed that. I think now you can say, should have been another guy that should have been in that kind of conversation. But Joe Burrow, he had one of the most amazing collegiate seasons that we had ever seen. Right? We're talking about a guy who really kind of shattered records, threw the ball all over the place. Joe Burrow, man, he was intriguing because he came out of nowhere talking about a guy who transferred from Ohio State, could not play over Dwayne Haskins. And maybe that, you know, just some stylistic stuff. But Burrow went to Ohio State. LSU was a two-year starter there. Their first year, still playing that kind of stale LSU offense that they had. Joe Brady ended up coming over from the New Orleans Saints and implementing more of a spread, pass-happy offense that was definitely more efficient. Help with more of the spacing, and boy, did that help Joe Burrow and his draft status. I mean, boosted this guy. He had an amazing career. The thing that really jumped out to me about Joe Burrow was really his playmaking ability, and that was one thing that really kind of boosted him in my eyes. Again, he was someone, he made all the throws. He was efficient, did all those things at a very high level, made the throws down the field. But the plays off script that he was able to make and being able to utilize his legs, I think that's what really made him be the number one overall pick. I think most people, when they look at him, they'd say, well, efficient passer, all that. I don't think his arm was extremely big, and I was curious to see how that would translate to the NFL. But having the athleticism, ability to make plays with his legs, as well as his downfield ability to make all those throws, thought he would be terrific translating over to the NFL. Now, he gets to the NFL, and he started off very well. He's playing good at a high level, but obviously he goes to the Bengals. Terrible organization. The organization was so bad that even a guy like Carson Palmer was like, I wouldn't go there if I were him. And Carson Palmer said that's the same thing people told him. Like, listen, you can't change Cincinnati. Now, I think Joe Burrow's from that area, so it was definitely a more, you know, difficult decision on him to, you know, pull a whole Eli Manning and hold out and say, you know what, I'm not going to that organization. But he went, and it has worked out for the better. Started off a little rocky, lost a lot of games as a rookie, was playing well, and then boom, towards ACL, gets hit. They try to, you know, help him and revamp the offensive line after missing the last half of his rookie season. I remember talking to some people, you know, Joe Burrow ended up, and Justin Herbert, we'll get into him. But, you know, I had to ask people, you know, who would you rather have right now if you had to pick one of these guys and build your organization around them moving forward, Herbert or Burrow? And I think it was pretty split. So that kind of tells you the type of season that Burrow was having leading up to the torn ACL. He comes back, and I definitely think that the Bengals and Burrow are exceeding all expectations. We are talking about a guy that just went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it was an amazing game, and he gave his team every opportunity to pull that game out and really out-duel Aaron Rodgers. That's the type of level that Joe Burrow is playing at right now. You know, heading into that game, you had Cincinnati Bengals team that was 3-1. When's the last time we could say that? It's been a while. It's been a while now. And it was like, man, are they for real? But they had several opportunities to beat Green Bay and go to 4-1. Obviously, they had the missed field goal, a few missed field goals in that game. Their kicker actually thought he made one, definitely missed it. In overtime, Aaron Rodgers ended up doing his thing and Green Bay won. But Joe Burrow, he has had a terrific start to the season. I still don't think that the Bengals are like this great team, but I think if they wouldn't have him and just some more average quarterback, they'd be doing bad, man. But he's holding that team afloat, holding them together. I'm looking forward to seeing how he progresses. But so far, I don't think the Bengals are necessarily wrong for drafting him. Could they have drafted a better quarterback? We'll get to that in a second. Now, a team that might be looking like they're a little wrong because of who they drafted, definitely. I mean, we got to talk about the Miami Dolphins and selecting Tua Tagovailoa. I don't want to butcher his name, but Tua. And Tua out of Alabama, there was a campaign going on. Tank for Tua, tank for Tua. And people were just talking about him being just this amazing prospect. I remember watching him on film and saying to myself, and I wasn't really watching him, but more so the receivers. He had Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy that were coming out. We'll get to those guys. But I'm watching Tua, and I couldn't help but say, you know, this, I don't think he's as great as everybody's saying he is. He can make throws at different levels. I thought, you know, from an athletic standpoint, a little more average. Obviously, you don't need to be a great average, a great athlete to be a great quarterback. But I thought there were some limitations a little bit more than what I expected when I started diving into the film and some missed opportunities and missed plays. I'm like, man, I think these receivers could actually be doing even better. But obviously, he got, you know, and that was a big decision between Tua and now what we know from Justin Herbert. They chose to go with Tua, and it has not been pretty. He was someone coming off of an injury, and it's hard to hold a whole lot against these guys as rookies, especially him coming off of an injury. But these guys, remember, this was a COVID season. They didn't have just that pure preparation to OTAs, mini camp. Even training camp was a little weird. They were doing like meetings from their desktop and not meeting in person, just all kind of weird stuff going on with COVID. And his season started off weird. Obviously, he didn't start off as a starter. They elected not to start him and go with Fitzmagic. At one point, they ended up pulling Fitzmagic and going with Tua, only to eventually go back to Fitzmagic. And it was just a really weird dynamic. He started off 3-0, but it looked a little weird. Was winning games. I think a lot of people were like, man, like, it's probably going to look weird. It's coming off of a hip injury. Some people didn't even know if he would play again. Didn't have a whole lot of preparation leading up to the draft. So this is to be expected. And they wanted to play him. It just looked weird. Now, that wasn't the only weird part. The other aspect of this was heading into year two. It's like, okay, what's it going to look like? You have a full offseason. He was not voted a team captain. That's weird because that's voted on by your peers. Did they not view him in that light? There were a lot of guys kind of speaking out against him coming out. When you asked Jalen Waddle and you asked Devontae Smith, hey, Tua or Mac Jones? They were like, Mac Jones, without a doubt. And it's like, man, there's this whole campaign, tank for Tua, started off weird, had the injury, comes in, you know, gets benched, gets pulled in key moments, don't know what's going on heading into year two, not named team captain, starts off the next year, looks sharp in the preseason, and then gets hurt early in the year. And that's kind of been the story of Tua. That's kind of where he's at right now. A report on him. Could see what he does moving forward. But right now, I don't think they are looking smart to pass over the next guy who went first round. And we're talking about Justin Herbert. Herbert was a guy who was kind of pegged as being like, I don't even want to say raw, because he stayed for 4 years at Oregon. But a big, big arm, athletic gunslinger. How is this all going to translate, right? Because we're looking at him and there were still like a lot of questions. Now, another thing you could question is the talent or lack thereof at Oregon wasn't great. And I don't think anybody will hold that against him. The talent there, subpar as far as the receivers go. They don't have any weapons that are really getting drafted. Maybe Vardell, the running back, but he splits time with Dye. I mean, who's the guy over at Oregon? So he dealt with that for a few years and heads to the NFL. Not even supposed to start. They got Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor's going to start. They were hell-bent on starting Tyrod Taylor. There was pretty much nothing that the rookie Justin Herbert could do to start. And next thing you know, some phantom lung shot that Tyrod Taylor took made you have to play Justin Herbert. And he played so well that you had to stick with him. I mean, comes in, lights it up. And he had several games. I mean, he's stringing games together where it's just like, wow, this dude is having an amazing year, especially for somebody that didn't, you know, take all the starting reps in offseason, training camp, preseason, all that stuff. Sharing time with Tyrod Taylor, wasn't supposed to be the guy. And he comes in, he's lighting it up. He jumped out to some big leads on some teams, and those leads kind of dwindled and the team ended up losing. Do we put that all on the rookie? Probably not, learning the experience. But everything that he went through as a rookie and balling and going toe-to-toe with guys and the early struggles from a win standpoint, ended the season, four straight wins, balling, wins rookie of the year. Probably wasn't even close, even though Justin Jefferson balled as well. Killed it. And I'm thinking, can he back that up? Can he back up? How do you back up that type of season with all the expectations that are going to be on him? And are those expectations going to be realistic for a guy heading into year two? I think he's, again, has exceeded all expectations. We're talking about a guy who comes in, he's balling, had a weird game against the Dallas Cowboys where they ended up losing. But overall, the Chargers are set. They have their guy. I mean, he's definitely looking like the best quarterback from this draft. And even the guy who had some questionable, you know, the accuracy, whatever it was, all that's out the window. He is a playmaker. He's figured out ways to make plays. He's throwing the ball all around. He's making plays with his legs. He's a big athlete. He's looked tremendous. He just went toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. Outdueled him. Won the game. Amazing victory. Kind of got that monkey off his back. That was the same game that they lost last year when they had the big lead. But that wasn't it. Just this past weekend, had to go score 40-something points to beat the Browns. Outduels Baker Mayfield. An amazing display. And really, with a defense that, I mean, we saw that same defense play against Justin Fields and hold him to one passing yard for an entire game. The team had one net passing yard. That same defense that sacked Justin Fields 9 times goes up against Justin Herbert, and he hangs 40-plus points on them. This dude is playing out of his world. He is looking like he's in the elite category, and I don't even know if we can compare any of the other quarterbacks in this class to him. All right, but that's going to do it for the quarterbacks. Going to wrap up a lot of these first-round quarterbacks and these guys that make an impact. When we get back, we're going to get into some of the receivers, talk about my analysis on some of these guys, what I thought about them, and what they're doing now. We are back and better than ever. All eyes on the gridiron as teams are back for another football season. And as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be your number one source for everything football. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% off your welcome bonus on your first deposit. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus, all right? From football, basketball, boxing, baseball, anything you can think of, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of an amazing offer, all right? This is available throughout the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. I definitely will be betting on games this weekend coming up from football. Got my San Francisco Giants playing right now. Getting some baseball games in, some props, some bets on that. And BetOnline is where the game starts. Go head over there right now. Tell them Locked On sent you. All right, so let's get into these receivers. And man, oh man, this is an interesting group. All right, the first guy taken was Henry Ruggs. Just right off back, I was not a huge fan of Henry Ruggs. All right. I thought he was a terrific athlete, and I think his speed was going to stand out to everybody, right? I mean, just out of this world when he got the ball in his hands. But his biggest issue wasn't so much what he did with the ball in his hands. It was away from the throws, right? Before the ball was thrown, his route running, his ability to, you know, kind of separate and utilize that speed throughout routes. And we call that, high-end controlled speed. Did he have that? And I didn't think so. So I'm looking at him as a guy who is a little smart, but plays big. And I like that. He will go above the rim, attack the ball, highest point. Good job. Great hands, all that. Amazing hands. But can he improve his high end controlled speed? And what I mean by that is, while he's running routes, is he consistently threatening cornerbacks with his speed? And I didn't think so. I saw a guy sitting on his routes. I was watching him against LSU, Christian Fulton. No issues with him at all. I'm just like, if you're a speed guy and your game is predicated on speed, but you're not using that on a consistent basis, but you do use it if you catch a ball in space, how consistent are you going to be at the next level? So that wasn't me saying that he wasn't going to be good, but I think that is also the reason why a lot of speed guys don't necessarily have a lot of success in the NFL, especially that people think. Right? Think of the best receivers in the NFL right now, DeAndre Hopkins, Devontae Adams, four or five guys. They're not speedsters. They know how to win. And sometimes these guys that are speedsters, the game is kind of predicated on that, and it can lead to a little inconsistency. So didn't have the ideal rookie year, especially for the first guy that was taken. Don't think he had has the start to the ideal second year. He has made plays, and he made plays as a rookie, and he's making plays in the second year. But when you're taken that high, you're the first receiver taken off the board, and we'll get to some of these other guys that were drafted after him, I think you would like to see a little bit more consistent production from him. I'm going to lump him with Bryan Edwards because that was a guy that I was extremely high on. And obviously he was a third round pick, but Bryan Edwards, man, he has not just, they just haven't had the opportunity. So whether it's Ruggs, who hasn't had a whole lot of opportunity, but Edwards as well, it's like, what's going on there? Early in the season for the Raiders, and both of these guys obviously went to the Raiders. Early in the season, you know, it was like when they needed Edwards most, when it was like key moments and they need somebody to come through, they went to Edwards then. But it wasn't something that was consistent throughout games. And they still haven't really gotten in the groove of really just giving him the ball, even though when they do throw him the ball, he's protective. What is going on over there in Oakland? They got to figure out how to use these guys because Bryan Edwards was a guy who was big, 6'3", 215 pounds. He's twitched up, extremely strong. He's good at the catch point, good run after catch. What's the issue? Why can't they get him more involved? And why is it that when they need him most at the end of the game, and we saw a game who was against Baltimore Ravens, he started going crazy and really was helping that team, leading them to victory. Why can't he be involved more often? So we're missing that with him. Jerry Jeudy. I think the expectations were set so high that people kind of look at his rookie year as, I don't want to say a failure, but maybe somebody that didn't do as well as you would like to see. We're talking about one of the more elite route runners coming out of college. I think his biggest issue for me coming out of college was he didn't play well playing through contact. And in the NFL, are you going to be just consistently just so wide open that the contact isn't an issue? I don't think so. Felt like when guys were around him or near him, or he was potentially going to, you know, be hit while catching the ball, he just dropped it. And he had a ton of drops his last year at Alabama. I think it was 9. Had a ton of drops as a rookie. I believe it was 8 or 9 again. So some of it, you know, people would say, well, the quarterback play, his rookie year was inconsistent. You know, you had Drew Lock, whatever. I just think, you know, catch the ball, and that was an issue with him in college. Now, year 2, you're expecting big things. Teddy Bridgewater's named the quarterback, and this is a guy who's going to feed him the ball and get him the ball, and he's going to be really good. But he gets injured, and he's missing the rest of the year. So, or was it a high ankle sprain? So he's going to miss some time, whatever it is. He's going to miss some time. That's not a good, you know, thing that you want to go into starting your sophomore season. You want to hit the ground running and doing well. It's starting off a little iffy for him, but I'm still high on him. He still had upward of, you know, 800, 900 yards as a rookie. Played well in spurts, but maybe, you know, would like to see the drops limited. And I think that will help his production even more. The next guy that was drafted was Lamb. CeeDee Lamb, I think he's been everything and more that they thought they could have. He's a guy who was my wide receiver 1. Jeudy was my wide receiver 2. But he was my wide receiver 1. And it was all about, man, like when I saw, like, okay, he had to win with routes, he was able to do it. It was weird because watching him at Oklahoma, he was a guy that did more running 2 spots, kind of more lumbering movements, and then was terrific after the catch. How consistent would that after the catch be at the NFL level? Because he's doing it in the Big 12. But it has translated well, not so much maybe the run after catch, but just the big play ability and the production is there. As a rookie, it was there. His second year, it's been, you know, he started off first game, I think he had over 100 yards against Tampa. This last game, he just had caught a long bomb. So when given the opportunity, he's been productive. When they go away from the pass and they're not throwing the ball a whole lot, maybe his production dips a little bit. You also have Ezekiel Elliott, Tony Pollard, guys like that in the backfield, Amari Cooper, Gallup. They have a, you know, terrific plethora of weapons there. He played more slot as a rookie, and I thought that was good for him to really learn how to consistently win there and give him more, you know, have him line up against linebackers and safeties give him a more advantageous situation. This year, he's played on the outside, and he's done tremendous. So shout out to CeeDee Lamb. He's done terrific, making everybody look good that had him as CB1. But this next guy that I'm going to talk about, and I think the Eagles probably don't want to talk about it because they passed on him for Jalen Reagor, but Justin Jefferson, who has been all-world, 1,400 yards as a rookie, broke the record, has been amazing. The route runner, the contested catch, the vertical threat. People thought that he was going to be just a slot. They pegged him there, said he wouldn't be good. All this, that, and the other. They had all these questions about him. When all he did was produce, I think he kind of got lost in the shuffle because of the hype that Ja'Marr Chase got. But he was terrific at LSU. He played in the slot there, and people said, well, he's just going to be a slot, even though he played on the outside as a sophomore and did good there, but they didn't have just the spread offense that they went to his junior year. But Jefferson has been terrific as a rookie, balled out sophomore year, balling out again, already has almost 500 yards. So he's definitely going to be a guy who will end up over 1,000 yards. And with the added game, I could see him definitely getting that, another, 1,400 yards. That's a lot to put on the guy. Can he do it back-to-back years? That'd be crazy. But he's definitely on pace to do that. So shout out to Justin Jefferson. He's balling. Another guy from that year, Brandon Ayuk, who missed four games but still was very productive, had seven touchdowns as a rookie. Year two, it has been weird, to say the least. He's seen maybe six targets. We'll get to the cornerbacks a little bit later, but I think Trevon Diggs has more interceptions than Brandon Ayuk has catches in this season, and Ayuk has not missed a game. The targets haven't been there. They're talking about him maybe being in the doghouse with Kyle Shanahan. Not sure exactly what's going on there, but it's been a very weird situation, especially for a guy who was so productive as a rookie, who showed all ability of running routes, you know, getting free against guys like Tre'Davious White, winning vertically on routes, having 100-yard games. I mean, balling again. The production was there, seven touchdowns as a rookie between receiving and rushing. And nothing this year. Nothing. Can't tell you what's going on there in San Francisco with him, but it's interesting, to say the least. And got to figure it out. Talent is good, but production has not been there. Now, this next guy, T. Higgins, he's kind of like the forgotten man from this class. And he started off the sophomore year doing okay. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase takes some of his targets. Tyler Boyd, he's been terrific as well. But as a rookie, he almost had 1,000 yards. And it's almost like he gets like overshadowed. They talked about everybody else from that class with, you know, the CeeDee Lambs, the Ayuks, and all these other guys. But maybe it's because Higgins was a second-round pick, but he has been terrific. Again, almost 1,000 yards as a rookie. And now sharing the load with A.J. Green, who's now obviously in Arizona. Started off this year, has done well. And now he's only played, I believe, three games. I think he missed a couple games. But even in those games, he's been fairly productive, starting a little slow. I'd see if they start to get his groove back and get him more involved. Tyler Boyd, again, taking a lot of targets. Ja'Marr Chase, he's getting targets. He's been very productive. Will Higgins get lost in the shuffle, or will he kind of find his footing? Curious to see how that whole thing plays out. And the last two guys I'll talk about from this receiver class, we got Laviska Shenault, Chase Claypool. Claypool, the production is there, scored 10 touchdowns as a rookie. Awesome. I actually thought he was going to be more of a tight end because I'm like, man, this dude's just not creating any type of separation as a receiver. You know, he has this big body, but it's like, man, do you have to fight every single time? His movements were a little lumbering. I'm like, okay, vertical threat was good. Hands were good. Terrific. Body control, amazing. All that checked out. I'm like, I think he's a tight end. He's built like that. But he got drafted to Pittsburgh. And I bumped him up, and I did like a redraft thing where all the guys, you know, I had them ranked pre-draft, and I went post-draft, and I redrafted guys, or not redraft, but re-ranked guys based on where I have them, based on landing spots. And based on his landing spot as a receiver going to Pittsburgh, I said, oh, I had him at number five, wide receiver five. I like the thoughts of Ben Roethlisberger throwing the ball downfield to him, his ball placement. Now, Ben Roethlisberger has been shaky. But just the thought of it and what he could be. And I think he was that, you know, being able to catch the vertical passes. They utilized him in ways I didn't really think of with the end of rounds and things like that, getting him some rushes and everything. But he has been solid. The production is there. Deontay Johnson gets a bulk of the targets. But he's kind of been that wide receiver too and kind of that alpha guy in that on that receiver group. I think Ben Roethlisberger and kind of his declining ability, throwing the ball downfield, that's been a little weird, that whole situation. But Chase Claypool has been playing through it. He's been productive. I like where he's going. So, all right, here we go. When we get back, we're going to talk about the cornerback groups, where I have some of these guys ranked, and how one guy has really been elite. Stay tuned. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With ever-increasing numbers, makes, and models, it's now impossible for you to find your local chain auto parts store and find everything that you need with all the parts to your car. Why endure often pointless or seamless, intimidating questioning about your car? You know, I have a Dodge Durango and, you know, I have a Hemi and, you know, they're always asking me these different questions about that. Forget that. You don't want to wait behind a counter and, you know, have to wait on these guys just to find the parts that you need when you can do this yourself. How do you do that? You have the computers, you have the access to rockauto.com at your house in your pocket. Save your time, save your money when you use Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more on the same parts from the chain store or the dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselves for over 20 years. Now, I'm not a do-it-yourself person, but maybe you are, and this is a place that's definitely going to help you. Rock Auto prices are reliable, low for everyone and every customer. They have everything you can need. Brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even, shoot, you can get your carpet replaced. All right, so we encourage you to go over right now and get everything you need from Rock Auto. All right, how do you do that? You go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or your truck. That's Locked On when they ask, how did you hear about it? Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Okay, here we go. Let's get into the cornerback group. And this was definitely an interesting group. All right, you had the guys like Jeffrey Okuda, CJ Henderson, AJ Terrell, Jeff Gladney, Diggs, Jalen Johnson, Bryce Hall, Cam Dantzler, and many, many more. But we're going to get into Jeffrey Okuda first, because this was a guy who, when I talked about him on social media and the responses I got, you would swear that the kid was Deion Sanders Jr. All right, and I didn't think it was quite that. I thought he played in the system extremely well, the scheme that they had designed for him at Ohio State. Take him number 3 overall. I didn't know if I saw the pure elite athletic traits that I ideally would like to see when drafting the corner that high. I think that he had good coverage. I thought his press bill was one of the better press bills that I had seen since Josh Norman at Carolina Panthers in 2015. Thought that was awesome. All right, but gets drafted number 3 overall, and he deals with injuries. And before the injuries, it wasn't all that great. Now, again, talking about a rookie going, after you're drafted, it kind of is what it is. But everybody's going to hold the draft stock against you on where you were drafted, and they did that with him, and now they're calling him a bust. So he missed a lot of last year, had some injuries, things like that from his rookie year. Goes into year 2, was the first game of the season, ruptured Achilles, done for the year. Kid can't buy a break. Definitely not ideal. We don't really have a good take on what he is right now, because we haven't seen him be able to consistently play. But CJ Henderson, again, another interesting case. And I think when we look at rookies and we look at the talent that they possess, it's just like, we just think like, man, everybody's going to pan out. And this is not true. And CJ Henderson, for whatever reason, did not pan out in Jacksonville. We're talking about a guy who missed 9 games due to injury. I believe it was a rotator cuff. Comes back. Change of staff, everybody knew in, Urban Meyer, and it started off weird. They're talking about house visits, something that's going on there, and they're trying to get him out of the house. Comes in, they're talking about potentially trading him. I'm like, what? You know, like, he possesses all this talent. And next thing you know, he gets traded to the Carolina Panthers. I don't know what's going on with CJ Henderson. I still believe that he has all the ability that's needed to be a legit cornerback in this league, but I don't know if it's something mentally. He's going to have to figure it out within himself how to get over that. Now, AJ Terrell, he's been playing well, starting corner over there for Atlanta, doing terrific there. Jeff Gladney, I think he's out of the NFL, got released, had some like off-field issues. So you had him, and come on, guys. We got to understand what's at stake here. So when you're dealing with a situation at home or whatever, you have to keep in mind what's at stake. What am I willing to lose? And what is this person that I'm getting into it? What are they willing to lose? Do they have as much to lose as me? We got to be smarter. We're getting into these situations. And Gladney right now, from last time I checked, he ain't in the league. Hopefully he, you know, does some things to kind of repair, you know, how people view him, especially the NFL. Sometimes it takes a while to do that. Sometimes it takes sitting out a year, but the Vikings cut him after just playing, being a rookie. A guy who is excelling. All right, there's two guys. You know, I'm going to get to the first guy first. Jalen Johnson. I was not extremely high on Jalen Johnson, but he has proved me wrong. He has been terrific playing for the Chicago Bears. I think that he has been everything from a coverage standpoint, tackling, the challenges that he's been taking on, the defense that they've had, having him play off, having him play press. I saw his coach put together like this highlight film when he was drafting. He's like, look, he does everything you need, whether it's, you know, a two high scheme, single high scheme, you know, quarters, divide, press, man, whatever it is, he's able to do it. And so far for Chicago, he has done just that, and he has definitely exceeded my expectations. And along with, I believe it's Snead from the Kansas City Chiefs, I think they had two of the better rookie years. I think for Jalen Johnson, that's transferred over. Now this next guy, Trevon Diggs. I mean, can we write his name in for All-Pro right now? Now, Trevon Diggs, he had I don't even want to say an up-and-down rookie year. But one thing that I look for with corners, and I want to see, are they going to, you know, have that kind of coming-to moment, is how good are they with challenging receivers at the catch point? And I thought he challenged receivers every single time. He was always right there. Now, did he get beat a couple times vertically? One time by Julio, one time by DK Metcalf. Yeah, that's going to happen at the cornerback position. But more times than not, the dude was right there, tight coverage, fighting for balls. And he actually tweeted me and was like, look, man, like when nobody believed, like you believe. I was like, you know, I appreciate that. But what I did was I saw through what everybody sees is him giving up a catch and me noticing the coverage that he had and thinking at some point it's going to start going his way. Well, his sophomore year, I mean, we might be able to pencil his name in for Defensive Player of the Year, first team All-Pro, Pro Bowl. God, I mean, he has, what, 6 interceptions in 5 games? 5 straight games with an interception? First player in history to do that? Like, what's going on here? Elite. Now, when he was coming out of college, he looked a lot like Antonio Cromartie to me. That's what he looked like. I was like, this is baby Antonio Cromartie. And did I expect him to play at that level? There's some projection there. I thought from an athletic skill set standpoint, he lacked a little bit from pure athleticism, almost like an Okuda. But the athleticism in the sense of ball skills, being able to make plays, that was all there. And he is putting that on full display, whether it's on vertically pushing routes, him going and intercepting deep posts to jumping hitches and returning them for touchdowns. The Dallas Cowboys struck gold with Trevon Diggs. And he's looking like arguably one of the best players from this class. And I bet if there was a redraft right now, he'd be going top 3. Who will go ahead of him? Probably Burrow and Herbert, and then you got Diggs. We'll probably put Justin Jefferson in that mix. But I think we'll probably value the cornerback a little bit more than receiver. All right, that's going to do it for today's episode, man. I appreciate everybody hanging with me. Thank you for being the first thing that you listened to today. Make sure that you guys stay tuned and keep it locked in here. We're going to continue diving into draft prospects, the college stuff. You got to remember, myself and Ryan Tracy, we haven't been like the deep college guys, but we're digging into it. We've been draft analysis guys, and we have that sewed up. The college thing, a little bit newer, but hang with us. We're getting it right. I appreciate everybody from tuning in. Let's get it. Locked On NFL Draft.